Welcome to the Giant Leadership Podcast, where we help leaders like you get the knowledge and skills you need to impact more people and live the life you've always wanted. Get ready to experience tools, tips, and advice by the co-founders of Giant and best-selling authors, Jeremy Kubitschek and Steve Cockrum.
Hello, hello, friends. Welcome to the Giant Leadership Podcast. I'm Jeremy Kubitschek, as always, with Steve Cockrum, my British friend. Hello, Steve. How you doing, brother?
I am well, Jeremy. Thank you. Yes, very excited. I confess this week was one of a painful one when you get your Facebook memories. It was 2 years ago that you and I last were physically in the same place on our romantic week away in Cancun. And we've not seen each other since, but we are meeting in San Antonio in less than 3 weeks' time. And I don't know about you, but I've been ticking the days off on my calendar because obviously I miss you far more than you miss me.
Well, and again, I always have to say the caveat, and our wives were there in Cancun too.
Yeah. And I always say it so that you have to then put the disclaimer that your Baptist roots die hard, Jeremy.
I did see that your wife did bring you a cup of tea just now. Is that right? Hold it up. Show the yes, you got your cup of tea, which is awesome.
Twin Cities. Yeah, very one of the many airports British that I've been through over the years.
Well, so how you been, man? How you been since we last talked?
Gosh, good, I think. I mean, I said last time that life is pretty much back to normal here, which is exciting. And then just when we thought we got it all back to normal, Mr. Putin invades Ukraine and changes everything.
Do you owe me anything?
I was about to say, because I know what your connectors are like, it has to be said, Jeremy, you were right and I was wrong. I was working on the assumption that we were dealing with somebody who was sane, and we're obviously not. So, apart from the fact that the other news in the Cockrum world is our house purchase is going through. That is a miracle. 9 years after we started Giant Worldwide together, that was always one of my goals, to buy Mrs. Cockrum a house. Sadly, we've had to sell a lot of our shares at just the wrong moment, thanks to Vladimir. So, but we will have enough for our deposit and stamp duty. So we will move in about 2 months' time.
To make sure people know that not shares in Giant.
No, other shares. other shares, Jeremy. Yeah, they're slightly more liquid. Why would I sell something that just keeps appreciating week by week in value at the moment? What about you? What have you been up to?
And you know, the thing I love about English homes is they all have names for the most part. And I wish they would do that in America, but we're too grid system-ish, you know? It's like 1901, 1902, all these different, you know, numbers. But over there, you've got house. So what's the house name?
Well, at the moment, it's called Craner. But we are, because being a true Brit, we're going to see if we can rename our house to be more meaningful. So we're going to call our house, if we're allowed, Wilbrook House. And for those of you know us, will know that that was when we lived in Pawleys Island, South Carolina, y'all. We lived on Wilbrook Plantation. And it was always the happiest place of our children's lives. So when asked what should we call it, they all wanted to call it Wilbrook House. So there we go. Hopefully you and Kelly and the gang will get to come and stay soon.
Absolutely.
We've just not had enough Giants coming to visit for the last couple of years. So all exciting.
Yeah. That's good. Well, I just returned from North Carolina. We had one of our friends, Kevin Bailey, owns a lodge, the Topoka Lodge. It's this unbelievably cool, it's like a movie set. in fact,
Kevin is very cool.
Our guests would like it. He probably could use it for a movie set. But the movie that set was The Fugitive. If you saw The Fugitive with Harrison Ford.
No way. Oh, wow.
When he jumped off the dam was right there, right next to it. And but we had 50 Giants. It was so fun. We had 45 plus HQ. They were all new coaches and consultants from around the world. And they came in and we had 3 days. It was just unbelievable, and activating people and showing them how to use Giant as a platform for income and impact. And man, so fun. So any of you who are listening, the early plug, giantworldwide.com if you're interested in becoming a coach or consultant or adding it to your repertoire. But it was really, really fun to be back with people. And, you know, having that size of group has been 2 years or more. So it was, yeah, it was a blast.
I know all my
missed you there. Wish you, you could have been there.
Well, I could have, but I wasn't invited. So that's another sore point, but don't worry. No, I'm joking. I think the thing is, though, I know that of all the voices, the connectors in my life and my world have struggled most with not being able to be with people in groups. So it was 2 years ago we did the marriage retreat in Cancun. I'm like, wow. In some ways, it feels like a long time ago, but it's just so lovely to be able to do those things. And we're taking another group of giants from this part of the world. We're going to Cyprus at the end of April. On a strategic retreat, if my wife asks. The fact we're going to the Artemis Hotel Bath and Spa Resort is probably the real retreat reason, or first gear, as we call it in Giant. So,
isn't that where all the oligarchs are going with their yachts?
That's where they're leaving as well. No, they've all been impounded in Cyprus. Yeah, let's just say there was a lot more Russians in Cyprus than anywhere else. But no, it's been good. It's been very, very fun. So,
Did they get your yacht or not? No, well, do you still have it?
No, it's kind of, you know, well, I think my yacht is just, it goes up and down the bath with me when I'm in it. That's probably the size of the yacht I have. But we have Giant 1, which is the airplane, Giant 2, which is the helicopter, and then we have Giant 3, which is the big boat, which I've never been allowed to use yet. So anyway, there we go.
Well, man, what a crazy turn of events. Who would have thought we would be sitting here in such a short time with that amount of devastation? And it's probably just getting started and as far as what that looks like, right? So what's the public view? What's the English view of what's going on? Because you're obviously closer. And even last night, they, you know, bombarded a nuclear power plant, power station. And Boris Johnson gets up and, you know, but what's the general view of what's happening from your seat?
Gosh, I mean, I think what is just stunned disbelief that we're watching basically what looks like scenes from the Second World War being replayed in a time when I think most people didn't think we would go there again. I think as well that the there's just massive admiration for the Ukrainian people and its leaders. And just stunned at the kind of their desire, whatever it takes, they're not going back into be part of Russia, and they'd rather go and fight and die, you know. And I'm just, you know, challenging the fact what sort of commitment would we have? And I think there's just a, I don't know. I think people are aware of the complexities of going, you know, yes, we'd love a no-fly zone, but are we really ready to shoot down Russian planes at the moment? And what does that mean? But I think that in some ways, the more the brutality and just the indiscriminate bombing of civilians and killing of civilians goes on, I think there will be a groundswell of opinion that begins to move that actually, if you don't take a stand for Ukraine, are you going to do it for Moldova? Are you going to do it for, because Putin, you know, it has to be suggested he isn't going to stop. He wants to redraw the old map. And, you know, one of his cronies actually had a picture taken with the map of where he was going next. So it's like, so you have to go before I'd have said, nobody could possibly be that much. Nobody could do that. Well, I think the reality now is with him, pretty sure he could do anything. And we've probably been never closer to, you know, could he press a nuclear warhead? Well, the good news is I heard, you know, some American retired admiral say, well, there's so many people in the command chain for nuclear that it's not easy just for one person to press go. But I think we're in very difficult territory, and I just don't know how he backs out of it. I don't know how, having gone this far, there is any way back with face saving. So that's my take on it. It's pretty depressing, just utter admiration. And I think in some senses there will come a point where probably hopefully NATO are thinking about it at the moment to go, what is it we can do? But Russia's a massive army, and they've been preparing for this for a while, but you're the expert on Russia, Jeremy, as was proved last time. So I don't know what's the take from America?
For those who don't know, I lived in Moscow in 1993 to 95. I lived, you know, in the midst of the Russian people, learned Russian, I studied Russian history and did a lot of work on understanding Stalin and mentality. And it's really an interesting one because at the core of the nationalist belief of Russia is like this desire to be something, and it's been there forever. And I think Putin's last hurrah was his legacy. You know, he's putting it together. The interesting part about it, what I feel so bad for, I mean, I feel horrible, obviously, for the Ukrainian people and what's happening. But I do feel bad for the average Russian.
Yes.
Who is becoming a pariah as well, unfortunately. Mm. The whole entire world is now stopping, you know, any services. And so, therefore, if you're a Russian, you unfortunately, leaders define culture, and Putin has defined a culture that all Russians are now fitting in and under. So I think everything is anti-Russia here in America, and it does bring back up the fervor of the Cold War, because most of us, if you think about, you know, my whole thing of most influence happens between 55 and 70. And so the leadership that are in the 50s to 5 to 70, we were all in the Cold War growing up. So it's almost like it feels like high school, college again, because this is what we were dealing with then, right? And so now everyone kind of brings back in the James Bond references, the, you know, Cold War, Red Dawn, you know, all of these references. It's like in us here to be like, yep, that's our mortal enemy. And it's just fascinating that you can kind of feel it, the pulse of like anger towards the Russians.
Yeah. The other person who's been, I mean, an amazing character is President Zelensky, or Zelensky, whatever it is.
Zelensky.
There you go. Obviously, my false teeth don't say that easily. But here's someone who was, to get it right, he was an actor playing the president in a TV series, came in on an anti-corruption to put things right, and is probably the most statesmanlike, most trustable leader I've seen on television in a long time. And the bit where, you know, Biden offered him a chance to leave and come to America, and he said, I don't need a taxi, I need ammunition. And it's just like, what courage to actually say, actually, I believe in something enough that I'm prepared to give my life for it. And, you know, they always say that basically, if you want people to fight, you attack their family and you attack their faith. And I don't know how it ends, because I'm not sure the Ukrainians are going to back down anytime soon. And I'm certain that the Russians aren't either.
I think, Steve, this is a TikTok war. I don't think Putin was ready for the social media. I think he's really good at tradecraft, which we're going to get into here with our guest. But I don't think he was really good with social media and understanding. So his long table being away from people, and his power plays from an ivory tower versus Zelensky, who's in the bunkers and he's on the streets. So the social media game, I mean, I saw, it's brilliant. The Ukrainian soldiers are giving the Russian, FaceTiming their moms. They're recording the soldiers crying and then sending it out. Well, I read this morning that America is even talking about it was in the Wall Street Journal. What if we actually give soldiers the right to leave? If they choose to leave, we'll sanction, or we'll give them a location or freedom to go anywhere they want until Putin is out. And you incentivize the soldiers to get rid of Putin. So it's just social media and that game. I don't think that Putin was ready for it. But that's what we're going to get into with our guests. Should we go to our guests, or should we have one question?
Let's do one question, because we always promise. Tracy, hopefully, who runs the show, look at that, appears as if by magic.
Hello, Tracy.
Tracy, do you have a question for Jez and I today from any of our millions of listeners around the world?
I do. It's actually a pertinent, very, very good question for your discussion right here. Lara, she's saying, the last few years have been very difficult for everyone, obviously, and the Russian situation has made it another layer on top of that. So how do leaders give hope to their people in the midst of such difficult times?
Why don't you go first this time, Jez? Great question, Tracy.
Yeah, it is a great question. So, you know, hope is really a desire for something, what you hope for, what you want to see happen, right? And when you constantly are wearing masks, when you're constantly locked down, when you're constantly, when you're, everything is changing, I think that you have to find hope in other things. And so it's almost like micro hope, macro hope, right? And so the micro hope is kind of where you start, which you start with small things, which is what are you hopeful for in your family? What are you hopeful for in your home? What are you hopeful for? And you have to rebuild hope. You have to start small, because a lot of the bigs, you can look at the world right now and go, it's hopeless. Meaning there's so many dissatisfactions and there's not much vision. It's hopeless. Well, to dust off vision, you have to start with microvision. You have to start with the little things around you so that you can kind of control what you can control and kind of build back into hope. That's my quick blink. Steve?
Yeah, it's really good. I think the giant tool that comes to mind for me, Tracy, was discretion and discipline. Discretion and discipline says it's really important for leaders to decide what they're going to share, when they're going to share it, and who they're going to share it with. And I think the reality is that leaders are not superhuman. They have their own issues. They have their own struggles. They have their own insecurities. We all do. And when the world is like it is, I would say it's really important for leaders to be even more intentional of what they share publicly into the realm with the people they lead. But it's to do that, they have to have a space and a safe place where they can really share how they really feel. They can share their disappointments, their frustrations, their angers. They've got to have a safe place to be able to get out their own issues, so that when you show up and you're actually leading your people, families, organizations, whatever it may be, you are not practicing your communication for the first time. You've actually had a chance to get rid of the poison or get rid of the anger or fire off a few grenades. And therefore, what you share is more measured. And it's almost like at times like that, intentional leadership is not acting, because it's not like you're lacking integrity. But what you're doing is you're being very, very careful, because people watch for your body language. They would listen to your words. And in times of real challenge and stress, I always feel that the impact leaders have is magnified, because people are looking to go, are you worried? Are you concerned? Are you struggling? Because then it gets magnified. When everything's going great, people can cope with you being having a bad day. When it's really everyone's up against it. And that's why, you know, watching leadership happen at the moment in Ukraine, if you think about it, I'm absolutely certain there are dark moments in the bottom cellars and wondering what on the earth's going on. Should we be, you know, is it better to surrender and save the bombing? But actually, when it comes to what comes out on television, what comes out in the sound bites, is that absolute confidence that says, I'm here, we're not going anywhere. And that's a leader, I believe, being very intentional in the midst of challenge. So that's, you know, to complement what Jeremy said, that's a great question.
Yeah, and for those of you who want to ask us a question, Tracy, where do they send a question into?
Yeah, just go to hello@giantworldwide.com.
Brilliant. Awesome. Thank you. All right. Hey, every week we've tried to bring on someone in, a friend or someone in the giant world. Today, I'm super excited to bring on Doug Pattison. Doug is in Barrington, New Hampshire. Hello, Doug. How you doing, bro?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. We've known Doug for a number of years. The interesting thing about Doug, and here's what we want to do to bring him into the giant world. Doug is a CFO of a company called TurboCam, a global manufacturing business, and just an amazing leader. But what you don't know, and this is really the fun part, is Doug is a former spy, and he is also he's a movie advisor, movie consultant, producer for a number of movies, which we'll talk about as well. And so you have a fascinating life, Doug. And I thought, what a perfect time to bring you in to talk a little bit of a Russian spycraft. You cool with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, let's go.
I have to say, Doug, I was very unimpressed with the fact that Jeremy cracked your identity and you confessed everything in a very short period of time. I'm thinking, how did he do it? Jeremy's always wanting to be James Bond. And it's a bit like he's going, I've cracked a spy. We're going to bring him on. I'm like, okay. So, Doug, I'm sorry you had to be subjected to Jeremy's dark arts of interrogation.
Waterboarding. Waterboarding.
What you don't know, Steve, is as you were talking earlier about the need for compartmentalization and as a leader, I controlled absolutely what I wanted Jeremy to know in that moment.
Yeah.
And I've known Jeremy for a long time. So it took about 10 years to get there.
So basically you're a double agent who's now using Jeremy, manipulating him to communicate what you want to communicate. I knew it. I won't tell him if you do.
I won't.
So Doug, hey, give our listeners an overview of your past. What have you done? And then get into the movie side as well.
Sure.
Kind of do that. Would you give us a little background?
Yeah, real quick. So I spent 10 years as a CIA officer, almost all of that overseas, trying to avoid headquarters as much as possible. Had a ton of fun doing that. Both my wife and I served in that capacity. And then joined TurboCam after a short stint in private equity. And then along the way, about 5 or 6 years ago, started working on film and TV projects. The current project I work on right now is a television show on Sunday nights called SWAT, which most folks can see on CBS. And that's a lot of fun to be part of.
Yeah. So what other movies have you done? You've been a part of a few more.
Yeah.
Share that with us.
I've been a part mostly of television shows like The Brave, Colony, a few others like that. We've made some independent films called Texas Zombie Wars, which are a lot of fun. And then most recently, in fact, you can still see it on most flights right now. I'm in a movie that I'm in called The Lost Leonardo, which is showing on BA, American, Delta, all those airlines flying around the world right now, and they're in flight entertainment. And it's a fascinating story about the Salvator Mundi painting, which was recently rediscovered as possibly the last Leonardo da Vinci painting to be found.
Wow. Very cool. Awesome. All right. So here we go. I've got a few questions for you. And it's mainly, let's talk first about Russia. And from a spy perspective, what do you do with bullies? I mean, how does the CIA, because CIA is typically more covert, obviously, and, behind the scenes. So what's going on with the CIA right now in wartime, and how do you deal with bullies from your perspective?
Yeah, I think, well, when I look at what's going on right now, one of the things that Putin has kind of handed to us is a phenomenal opportunity to recruit Russian intelligence officers who are looking at what he's doing as unhinged. And so I would expect officers all over the world to be, actively reaching out to their local counterparts going, hey, dude, this really can't stand. Look at who's allied with him. It's kind of a rogues gallery. And then look at who's united against him. There's just no way that this stands. And, the issues of, setting fire to the nuclear facilities, targeting civilians, and even the stories we're seeing in the social media war about the Russian troops never realizing they were going into combat, things like that. All of that can be used to kind of engage with and then hopefully push them over the line to get them to share information about what's going on, and also then to lead into ways to discuss undermining what he's trying to do. And I think that's really the hope at the end of the day is that folks inside his administration closest to him stand up and say, this cannot abide.
Obviously, the goal of the CIA is, from a spy craft or just the trade. So can you give just, this is more for the fun, curious listener. What is the normal daily work of a spook? I mean, like when they're out there, what are they doing to change the world in that regard?
Well, I guess one of the common misconceptions about it is that it's focused on changing the world. In fact, the primary role of CIA is to steal secrets, right? That's really what CIA is supposed to do, is steal secrets that then allow our president and other policymakers to make better decisions. Now, along the way, alongside that is a pretty significant role in what we refer to as covert action, right? And we've seen some of those, in the past, including, the killer capture missions in Afghanistan and Iraq for high value terrorists and stuff like that, as well as some of, the somewhat, spotty history of regime change throughout the world. But its primary role is actually the collection of information. And so the day-to-day would be officers out there meeting with people who have access to information on high value targets, information we need.
So before Steve asks a question, I got one more for you. Talk to us about Zelensky and what's interesting about how the media is playing, their role versus who he really is, or it's appearing as evil versus pure good. But what's your view of that? And that might be a little bit. Does that make sense? What I'm asking?
No, I get it. I mean, it's fascinating to watch this because it is being presented as an evil against pure good, and the world is always way more complicated than that, right? You guys noted Zelensky came in on an anti-corruption campaign, but he himself has been accused of, some corruption-related issues. He's also been accused of some civil rights-related issues inside his country. But right now, clearly in this fight we're all watching, he's our guy. He's definitely the better guy in this particular fight, and it's easy for everybody to get around. And as an actor, he's 100% on top of how do I leverage this? I don't want to say manipulate because of that, of the negative connotation in it, but really, how do I leverage this? And then kind of move the people where I need them to go. And by the people, he's focused in many respects way more on external borders than he is internal, because he's already got all the Ukrainian people on his side. That's not an issue. It's the rest of the world who he's playing this out for, and he's doing it brilliantly.
I've got one question, Doug, that wasn't on my script, but on the grounds that Jeremy and I often force each other to kind of commit to what we think will happen, mainly so Jeremy can then tell me he was right and I was wrong. But I guess as you look at the scenario where it is now, what do you see happening over the next 3-6 months sort of time window? Are you hopeful for the future? Love to hear your, honest opinion. Promise we won't hold you to it or embarrass you in the way Jeremy always does when I get it wrong.
That's okay. I'm used to being embarrassed anyway. I have four kids. They make sure that happens enough. That's such a huge question, right? On one level, I think they've entered into their new Afghanistan. Watching how quickly they've gotten bogged down. The real wild card, I think, remains Putin's mental state, because any rational individual looking at it sees that it's untenable. He can't continue this. The world is just going to harden against him. And short of leveraging ever increasingly nasty tools, I don't see any way that he ultimately accomplishes his stated goals at the beginning of this. So I think it stays bogged down for quite some period of time because I don't see him having the emotional intelligence to back down, to step back and say, find a way to unwind it. I think he's going to continue to double down. And that is, as you mentioned early on, the scary part about this, because of the nature of access he's got, and why, again, we hope that there are folks closer to him who are willing to stand up and be intentionally disobedient, willfully disobedient.
Thank you, Doug. That's to be honest like that, I really appreciate it, because I know it's not easy to commit to something that complex. But again, I think the people who follow us, we love trying to understand how do we engage with the world that's there and to have somebody's other perspective. Here's a question back to kind of spycraft, because obviously, it's amazing to actually have a chance to hear how leadership functions. One of the questions I have for you is to go, how do spies stay healthy physically and emotionally and mentally? Because I imagine from obviously my extensive watching of Hollywood movies, how do you actually switch off from that work? How easy is it to, in some ways live a normal life, or are you always waiting for a knock on the door that someone's coming to get you? Or, just tell us a little bit about how you stayed healthy and how you would see people in that particular world. What do they do to try and keep themselves healthy mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually?
Sure. I think it's actually one of the biggest challenges the organization or the community, the intelligence community writ large, is grappling with. And they're getting better at it over time, but it's very, very challenging. To the specific question of how I stayed healthy, ultimately it was by leaving. I chose to stay married rather than stay in that line of work. And, you know, the toll on families, the toll on marriages is incredibly high. It's one of the highest divorce rates of any occupation out there. And when I look at my entering class of officers that I joined with 20 years on, less than 2% of that class was still married to their first spouses, and many of them on three or four spouses along the way. So it's really challenging. The physical fitness part, I think, is one of the easiest aspects of it to deal with, right? And largely because you can leverage it in the work. You know, if you build a pattern of being outside running, you know, that fits into the natural pattern you've created. If you're going to local gyms, like, that gives you opportunities to meet people, be out and about. So that's easy. And the organization actually provides paid work time to stay in good shape as well, because there's aspects of that we need to. It's the mental and emotional health that are much, much more difficult. And I think those who have done it well do it really well by leveraging a few key areas. They have good, strong mentors that they've sought out and that are willing to support them. They typically have really strong partners, spousal partners to take care of themselves. And they have a strong faith basis, I think. And there's actually a pretty committed Christian community within the intelligence community. And I remember talking to a former commanding officer of Delta Force, and he said he couldn't have done it if he didn't have God to fall back on in those difficult moments to help him get through that. So I think it's those three key things, but it's incredibly hard. And the organization has not had a good history of providing mental support for folks that are struggling with PTSD or things like that. That has begun to change pretty significantly, but it's been an ongoing issue. Sorry, that was a lot.
Wow. No, that's fantastic. Great. It's a great answer. So, Doug, last question, and we'll let you go here. But the last question is from, now this is kind of more, it's not as deep as what Steve just said. It's just movies, okay? What movie or TV show, is the most accurate? And which one might good be question. The least accurate, you know, to sure. Spycraft or to spying? So or military, whatever.
Yeah. So one of my absolute favorite movies is A Most Wanted Man, right? So it's Philip Seymour Hoffman's last film. He plays a German spy. It's absolutely brilliant about showing the nature of spycraft. And no surprise, it was written by, you know, John Le Carré, or however how do you say his name? I don't ever even know. John Le Carré. But anyway, it was one of his novels that was turned into a film. And it's a brilliant film that shows kind of the moral ambiguity around this, because at the end of the day, you know, what a spy is doing is he's convincing somebody to commit treason against his or her own nation, either for money, ego, or some other significant motivation, maybe even ideological. But there's treason involved, and that comes at a cost. There's lying involved. All of those things change the individuals involved, both sides, both the spy and the asset that they're running. And so there's a tremendous ambiguity involved in that. And I think that he does a great job in that film of showing that. Least realistic. I mean, there's countless ones. James Bond is literally the worst spy ever, right? Everybody knows who he is. He's a drunkard. He's a philanderer. Like, he wouldn't pass a physical exam. He wouldn't pass a mental exam. Like, but it's great fun to watch, but he's the worst spy ever. And everybody right.
We can edit that bit out. Don't worry. We're never slagging off James. No, I love it. That's brilliant, Doug.
And another fun one that, you know, so we've all seen the movie, or many of us have seen the movie Taken with Liam Neeson, right? Where, you know, his daughter goes off to Europe and she gets herself into a bind, and he has to go rescue her. He's the worst dad ever. Like, he totally did not prepare his daughter to go out into the world. They had no trust relationship. He gave her no skills, and then lets her go off, and then he has to come in and save the day. It's a disaster of a precept there for
it must have done wonders, that film, for daughters asking to go on a European exchange program on their own. I look at that going, like, there's no way my daughter's ever going there. Because however much I'd probably send Jeremy, but my very particular set of skills do not lend themselves to taking on whoever it was he killed.
Oh my gosh. when we were living in London, Kelly and I decided to go on a trip to someplace we couldn't go in the U.S. because of how far away. So we went to the Maldives, and our kids went to camp in America. So we were on the other side of the world at the same time, and we were sitting there, and they had this outdoor movie theater, and it was like popcorn. They had a drink. You're sitting there in this Gilligan's Island kind of bamboo setting, and the movie comes up, and it was Taken by Liam Neeson on vacation. Of all movies,
right.
And you know, Kelly's like, "Oh my gosh,
Kelly would have loved that movie."
That's hilarious.
Did she watch it? Yeah, Justice. We did. We watched it. It was Justice at the end.
That's so
funny. Loves Liam Neeson now.
Yeah, and so you know, being somebody from the intelligence community, it's always you can't get too wrapped up in what's right or wrong in the films you're watching. And it's one of the reasons I got involved in working on projects like that is to make them a little bit better, right? And without becoming, taking them all the way to hyper realistic, which would bore most people, out of their gourds.
Last one for me, Doug. I'm a big fan of SEAL Team.
Yep.
I don't know if that's where actually, obviously, the CIA play a central part in that. And Mandy's been taken at the moment, which is a big issue for me. But I'd love to know your take on how. Don't worry about this, Jeremy. We can edit this. This is maybe just be for me. But
no,
how realistic? And also, if it is realistic, how much do they have to be careful they don't give away too much of actually how SEAL teams and CIA operate behind enemy lines?
Well, just to bust on the SEALs a little bit, we don't have to worry about TV shows giving stuff away. SEALs are happy to write books about it.
Fair enough.
There's so much information out there that worrying about giving away, what we call TTPs, tactics, techniques, and procedures on films and TV shows is, I don't think we have to worry about it too much. There's not really that many bad guys that are picking up new stuff. Snowden gave far more away than SEAL Team does
WikiLeaks.
In a real, real sense. Exactly. And so, but we do have to I've got a lifelong commitment to not reveal classified information. And so anybody that's advising on shows like that does have to find their line of what's actually allowed to be shared versus not. And it's pretty interesting looking at some of the technologies being used by those guys today and what's being shared on TV. And sometimes there's some intentional dissembling that's taking place in some of those shows as well.
Wow. Love it.
Doug, thank you for being with us, brother.
Yeah, thanks, Doug.
And thanks for your insights.
Absolutely. Happy to be here. And I love all what right. you guys are doing. It's awesome.
Thanks, Doug.
See you later. All right, my friends. So interesting, isn't it? It's just fun to talk to a spy and get perspective. And it's all about perspective. I mean, because you think about leadership right now and around the world. I mean, it's never more needed. We need leaders worth following, right? Versus people you have to follow. So 100x is important. So what's your last thought, Steve, for our time and for our listeners today?
I think it's, for me, I agree with you. I think right now that things are being shaken. In a way, they've not been shaken for a long time. The fact that Germany is actually supplying munitions now to war in Europe, the fact we've got, I think for me, it was asking me, what am I that committed to that I'm prepared to be sacrificial for? And I found it quite a salutary challenge because in a sense, I won't say I've become fat, lazy, and and in some sense my life is not touched. It's quite a sobering thought watching people heading from the UK back to the Ukraine to go to war because they believe in something that much. And I think it was just for me, just that asking the question, what does my life really count for? What do I, if I only had a certain amount of time left, which we all do, am I using it as strategically and as wisely? Because in a sense, I guess life gets heightened far more when you're not sure how many days you have left and what it is you're going for. So it was a little bit of a challenge to me and to those of you out there to go, actually, every day is a gift. And actually, in a sense, what you do with your time, with your talent, with your treasure really counts. And ultimately, how much am I doing it for the things that I believe will make a difference for good in this world, and how much of it is really for me? So that was my pioneer self-challenge in the mirror this morning of going, how do I look myself in the mirror and go, am I really giving of my best today for the things I really believe in and want to sacrifice for? What about you?
Yeah, I would say this, and for those listening, what if we use this time? Like, so we can't control what's going on in the world, but we can control our intentionality to our families, our intentionality to our team and ourselves. So to go leading ourselves, like using this to go, yep, I'm not gonna just going to abdicate from the world. What can I do? I can lead my family really well. I can lead myself really well. I can pour myself into helping my team really well. So make this a call up moment when you look at the world issues of just going, look, I can actually learn how to liberate people. I can actually learn how to do the things that are in my world. While that is out of control, this is in control. And so that would be my encouragement to you. So great. Well, as always, if you want to find out more information, giantworldwide.com. Steve, we have a founders link too, right? If they wanted to check it out.
Free account on Giant. They can go to giant.tv/founders. And that means you get free access to all that we're doing. And people will follow up with you to see how else we can serve you in your world with your team. So giant.tv/founders is Jeremy and mine's little empire. And yeah, excited to be with you. Thank you for listening. Great guest, Jeremy.
Cheers.
Great job.
It's fun. All right. Talk to you guys later. See you next time. Bye-bye.